So we're checking in once again with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for what's become a weekly Zoom chat. Tacky, good to see you again.
Good to see you again, Joe. You're looking great, and glad that we're still managing the best we can.
Yeah, here we are, a new month now. Whoever would have thought this would have been the new normal for, what, over 70 days, I think you said.
Yeah, you know, as I kind of said before the previous podcast, I mean, Wuhan, China went through 76 days, and that was true martial law, where the government, the police, the military surrounded that city, and they literally were dragging people out of their homes that were COVID positive, as well as police people off the streets. So this has been very trying for all of us, and we are slowly reopening, like all parts of the world. But, you know, you have to think about this. I mean, do you like the idea of having the National Guard come get you out of your house because you test positive? Yeah, I don't think anybody wants that. So, you know, again, I thank everybody for their cooperation, their patience, and all this. If you think that this is bad, keep in mind that the National Guard and police hasn't come to your home with hazmat suits, literally dragging you out of your house.
Right. Before we talk about state issues and the pandemic, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about your reaction to the national unrest that's happening in the wake of the George Floyd case in Minneapolis.
Yeah, you know, like everyone, we're all watching the news, and that was just a horrible, horrible, horrible situation. It could have been done 100 ways better. She never reached that level of escalation. And, you know, we have camera phones out there and everybody's seeing it on live television. So, I'm sorry, video cord on your phone then becomes live television because it just gets straight to the audience. But it's not the first time we've had video like this. There's been many incidences ranging from shooting of unarmed people in their cars, particularly black folks, as well as takedowns for very minor crimes. I mean, this was a check fraud. And this is not a violent offense. And violent and lethal force really shouldn't have been required, particularly on four police officers. I mean, I think there's a degree of common sense among all of us that this didn't make sense. And I understand the outrage. And it's been a long year already. I mean, people are afraid because the economy is completely a mess because of COVID. It's scary outside because of COVID. You could catch it and be very ill and potentially infect others and hurt them and potentially also die. You know, and it's depressing. People are getting tired. All this, the weather's getting warmer. And there's that feeling of helplessness. I think all of us have a little bit of it at this stage. We're not in control of our fates. And that combination, you know, creates a very tired and frustrated America. And I get it. At the same time, though, you know, I'm very thankful for people who expressed their opinions to me. I get a lot of emails and some phone calls, as well as people out there peacefully protesting, people peacefully making their statements, people using proper channels to let your voice be heard. And it's definitely reaching. Unlike my observation, and people can disagree that's listening to this, you know, this is the time when everyone can hear you because there's so little else going on that you are going to be heard. Our lives are suspended. And unfortunately, it's extremely unfortunate it has to come to this. Our lives have been suspended, you know, for this voice to be heard. And it goes all across all boundaries. It's not just about race, it's different ages, religions, because any one of us could become the situation if we don't say something. And I think that's also part of that reality as well. And, you know, thankfully, Boston and Massachusetts has very little incidents of police mistreatment of people being arrested or prisoners. There's not as many cases here as other parts of the country. And I think Massachusetts people as a whole are more civil about how we go about protesting, expressing our opinions. Sunday night was very regretful. Today's Friday, but I was on watch TV all through Sunday night. I was watching the Brockton situation all through Tuesday night. And, you know, those are still not the norms. I mean, Fitchburg, Lowell, Quincy, Randolph, many communities have been able to hold public statements. They're not exactly protests. I think it's more like a public statement, because they're protesting me to not do something, I think is the way to put it. It's a public statement. And, you know, people behave well. And I do understand there's a lot of fear, panic, because that's swirling around us every single minute right now. So, you know, the Asian caucus, through a lot of thought in the House, put out a statement online supporting the Black Latino caucus as well as people of color on this issue. We are working the Black Latino caucus together on future actions. People talk about the 10-point plan they put out. Only really half of them, or actually four, actually address the legislature. Two address municipalities and four addresses the federal issues. So they're not all addressable. And some of it actually is legislation existing, for example, you know, better reporting commissions to study about how reporting is done and things like that. So some of the actions are recommended are more a task force and give the legislature a little bit more light into some of the data that's provided and providing better data. So I think this will go on for a while. People ask me, you know, how much longer is this going to continue regarding people making these public statements? And I think it's going to go on for some more time. And rightfully so, we'll stay on the forefront of our lives. But you can look at yourselves. If it's not something I need to explain to anyone. You can watch the video yourself and make that determination that, you know, my opinion that this was not right.
Do you think, Tacky, that police body cameras should be something that is mandatory?
Yeah, we've been debating body cameras quite a bit. It's been an issue combination of funding and working with our friends in the police unions, and you know, this really kind of candid conversation. And some parts of the incidents around the country have had body cameras turned off, which has actually created more problems. If you're going through the right procedures, body cameras will demonstrate that you follow proper procedures. Conversely, if you're a bad actor or there's evidence that the suspect has done, the body cameras will catch up as well. So if someone attacks you and the body camera shows the person running at you with a knife, no one wants to get hurt, but it would demonstrate that what you need to do to defend yourself and others around you is justifiable. So I do know there's an additional cost. I know there's debate about how it's used and to use its purpose. But, you know, body cameras is something that definitely should definitely be part of the conversation. And, you know, I think that we really need to move that direction.
Yeah.
It protects both suspects, innocent people around you that are spectating, that shouldn't be there, in my opinion. If something's going down, people should keep a healthy distance away. Take your cell phone and take a video if you want, but don't get in the middle because you don't know the whole story sometimes. And obviously, it gives some protection to police officers regarding proper procedures. And the argument's always like, oh, the police I hear is that, oh, well, we can't do our jobs with being watched. Well, okay, that's nice. So why can't we watch? As a public figure, I'm always being watched. So as we discussed, you know, off camera, so to speak, a little bit, I'm afraid to say anything anymore in public because you constantly have to choose your words wisely. You can be misconstrued and you can be heavily criticized for it out in public. And anybody who puts themselves out there, you know, in a public forum and say something has to be prepared for that.
Hmm. So. Do you think there need to be kind of maybe national standards for police training at academies? That seems to be kind of splintered right now.
Yeah, the academies are run by the states, and this is a municipal / state power, because you know, oh, they've been militarized police force. They're not militarized. They're civilian police force trained by states to work with civilians. This is not a military, paramilitary. Crackdown thing. I mean, people have this kind of real misconception about police. They're not. They're civilian police force. And the training has been customized in each state towards the population they're serving. So, for example, in New York City, they did a mass amount of retraining, after several incidents there in both the police academy and its very, very large police force. But as you see now, New York, you know, not entire city. I think the news glorifies a little bit the violent sections, but there's, you know, ABC News, because, you know, I tell you what news channels I watch. ABC News tonight at 6:30, they showed a lot of instances where the police and the protesters and people making statements have very had peaceful situations and actually engaged in dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people, my family overseas thinks the country's burning down. It isn't burning down, but there obviously are bad instances. And there are some really beautiful stories too about our communities coming together.
Yeah.
So there'd be a good question whether the federal government wants to try to implement, perhaps through financial incentives, to change our police training. Because, like I said, that's historically always been a state and local power.
Right.
How to operate your civilian police force.
How important do you think it is, Tacky, that the police department reflects the community that it's based in terms of racial makeup?
I think it's very important. As an elected official, you know, who's a Chinese, you know, person of color, the legislature went to 2011 until Donald Wong, myself, and Paul Schmidt got elected. So, I mean, you know, in the centuries of the state legislature, it actually hasn't represented a certain demographic as officials that can talk candidly to our colleagues about our personal experiences on this. Some very positive, some very negative, but, you know, provides that life experience. You know, diversification of our government, I think, is very important. So there's a larger, not just reflection of our communities, but also ability to bring in different points of view for our civic leaders to get a better grasp of what things need to be addressed, what the different point of view is, and a better understanding about everyone in the community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know there's a lot of folks that are very engaged and want to learn more. You cannot replace some of the life experience of stories, you know, in helping crafting good policies for your own community. And it's not just about getting people of color with different backgrounds onto your city government or municipal government or federal government. It's also the experience they bring that's valuable that you may never have thought of. So, you know, so I tell these stories when I was a kid, a very different Quincy. It's not the Quincy today that I grew up in. And, you know, it's a matter of perspective. And those who know what I'm talking about from the 80s into the early 90s know exactly what I'm saying, the Quincy that we lived in, excuse me, from the 21st century. So the goal is to try to not repeat bad things, but you need some folks to tell you, you know, what it was and actually listen to them and take their advice and implement some stuff that you know that's doable. So but the other thing is also getting more people to want to apply.
Right.
You can't hire anybody if no one applies for the job.
Right.
And you still have to work towards those qualifications. So people that are interested on working in government in any sector should definitely make an application, definitely give it a try, and work hard to meet the requirements that are necessary. And as a person, you know, Quincy, as a person of color, I tell people your scrutiny level is much higher. Because there's this misconception that you weren't hired because of your merits. And this seems to be a recurring theme, particularly with women and people of color. Mm. And I'm very, very aware. People don't think I am, but I am. So, you know, I do work hard the best I can and understand the consequences of failure. It's different. It's going to be perceived differently.
Let's talk a little bit about what's been happening at the House of Representatives over the past week since last we chatted.
Yeah, we had 2 days of session via telephone, via web video this week. We had session Wednesday and Thursday as we continue to so-called reopen our house a little bit down to try to meet our constitutional requirements and conduct sessions in somewhat of a challenging and even slower than normal way, if you believe that, because we deserve this. It's sometimes wonder if we're how much slower we can do something in a session. We were able to pass Wednesday restaurant recovery bill is what it's called, but what it is trying to change our laws a little bit temporarily to allow some help for the restaurant industry. As we know, it's been devastated. I talked before that about 30% of all restaurants are probably never going to open again statewide for a myriad of reasons because of the customer bases. So we're trying to help the ones we can. Outdoor patio seating is part of this. We create an expedited process by which city and towns can utilize their local zoning and licensing components as expedited as possible regarding public notice and how to go about doing it. However, we left in place what we call the Section 15A part of the laws that requires due process for licensed applicants. So while we do understand people want to do things quickly at municipal government, we also want to maintain a degree of transparency and due process, and people do know what's going on and they don't feel like they've been blindsided. We also require that it has to stay within the envelope of the restaurant, meaning in the immediate area around it, like the sidewalk in front, for example, or parking lot in the back, right. Something in the area, because we don't want to disturb retailers around you mm-hmm. who are also struggling, who's trying to do curbside pickup at the moment, and hopefully be able to open properly if they're able to over the next several weeks. So we're very mindful of the fact that when restaurants need more space outside, we don't want to accidentally hurt that retail business next to you that's working very hard to try to reopen too, sure. Under very tough conditions. We allow a delay on sales tax collection as well as waiving penalties and interest. That should provide some accounting relief and let them focus on trying to get the job done as well as worrying about some of the other stuff. We also allow takeout mixed drinks.
Oh, okay.
So you still can sell shots, for lack of a better term. But you can sell a mixed drink to the standard of the restaurant, provided you put it in a cup where we can tell the seal is broken if you get stopped by law enforcement, for example.
Okay.
They can see if the seal has been broken. So, we have that provision there, and we leave it somewhat creative for the restaurants to figure out on their own how to ensure identification of a broken seal. So a lot of the stuff is just for the duration of the pandemic. We do still allow takeout beer and wine in a fixed quantity, but that and the spirits will continue to February. So we've extended time period for that. We also did a mail-in ballot law.
I was curious about this.
Yeah, we got a lot of emails regarding this. You've heard different proposals. I'm sure those of you who get emails from different political organizations be getting a different kind of advocacy from different groups.
Yeah.
So the chair of election laws, my colleague John Lawn, have been working very, very hard on this and trying to figure this out. And it's not just in a vacuum. They work with cities and town clerks. You actually have to implement this work.
Okay.
Secretary Galvin, who is the chief election officer in the Commonwealth, to try to find this balancing act. So starting July 15th, well, this is the House proposal. So just to let you know, the Senate still has to approve both the restaurant bill and this mail-in ballot. So it's not on the governor's desk as of this reporting. So by July 15th, the secretary is to mail everybody who's a registered voter basically an absentee ballot application. It's a no-excuse absentee ballot application. And you can mail it back to your city and town with a pre-post mark envelope.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll mail you an absentee ballot. And then you can fill it out and mail a ballot in, just like you normally do with an absentee ballot.
How will they determine what party ballot to mail out for the primary?
The voter registration.
Okay.
So
unenrolled.
Unenrolled. You're on the ballot, absentee ballot. They'll application. You can pick the ballot. So when you get your absentee ballot location, you have to tell them what ballot you want.
Okay.
So just like you do when going to the polls.
Right. Yep.
You have to tell them what ballot you want. So, those accommodations have to be made. We shortened the time for registered voting to 10 days before the election day. We now allow primary voting for early voting as well as at least one weekend day mm-hmm. of early voting in both the final and the primary. We require special accommodations for people who are unable to fill an absentee ballot.
Right.
For example, people with vision issues, people are blind, severely vision impaired. Absentee ballots are extremely challenging. The clerks have to figure out how to provide accommodations. obviously, public health standards are very high. We legislate that in law, but I think everybody knows this already. So it's almost like you legislate something we all know we have to do. But, you know, reassure the public, we are requiring high public health standards in the polling places that people choose to want to go vote in person. We also will require that the clerks takes all ballots that are postmarked even the day of the election.
Okay.
So just like election day, you know, you get to vote the day of, and if you want to vote the day of and drop it in the mailbox same day, you know, the clerks are going to have to wait for those other postmarks to come in.
Okay.
Your final results of KATV may be a little bit longer for official declaration of an account.
Not only QATV, but across the state, really, it's gonna take more time.
Yeah, nationally as well. I mean, Right. Most pretty much almost every state's gonna have some variation of this proposal.
Right.
So, if the numbers are wide margin, you can be fairly confident those preliminary numbers are okay.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But if it's a tight race, you're going to have to wait it out a bit longer in terms of getting it.
Yeah, you can't really call it, right? Even if it's with 100 votes, even, you'd have to wait.
Absolutely. So, Again, we're living in a COVID world, which I've talked to time and time again. It just takes a little longer to get stuff done.
Right.
But we want to show everybody has the right to vote, have the opportunity to vote, to take the affirmative action to vote. So, not registered to vote, you can do it online through the Secretary's website, and the city website. They have instructions there. And you'll be seeing, hopefully the Senate will be passing both bills soon, and you'll be seeing some notification and changes in the media about what to do next. And, our city clerk, Nikki, has done an incredible job keeping this all going and keeping us informed and working to find a system that makes sense and ensure that nobody's disenfranchised. One of the big challenges is polling places. So we have to give notice to the public about polling places changing, and we do recognize that this may be a shifting in the sand depending on if there's a second wave of COVID-19.
That's right.
So if you're in an affected location that has COVID-19, obviously we're not going to make that a polling place.
Right. Yeah. So
the public needs to be aware that if you want to vote in person, do check with the clerk during the week of election. Just in case there's an infection in a polling location, because these are other buildings, public buildings, private buildings. They're not, a lot of polling places are not city-owned properties. We've created some flexibility just in case.
Okay. I wonder if this is something, do you think, would take hold permanently in the future?
We don't know. We'll see how it goes. A lot of stuff we're trying now is for the first time.
True.
So, telemedicine's worked wonderfully well. Even though we've just been piloting it for the last several years, just seeing if the technology would work. But it's been very well received. And I think there'll be probably some lessons learned and it's going to be put in regulation soon by public health and with advice from the medical community about things that can be done better with telehealth, but people have been very positive. So I don't know. We shall see. Everything's trial and error. And I promise you not everything's going to go right the first time.
Right. Something that's been talked about in the past is, and we've talked about it too, is putting a lottery online. And it keeps coming up throughout this whole state of emergency because we've seen revenues drop, I guess. But it's still the most successful lottery in the country.
Yes. Our lottery, again, compared to other populations that are bigger than us, which is Texas and New York. We're a number 2-3 lottery seller in the United States, despite the fact we're a third of the size of New York and much, much smaller than Texas, which per capita puts us number one in lottery sales. It has been obviously impacted. People are at home now and so forth, but I'm not a big fan of online lottery for several reasons. One, obviously, it affects the lower socioeconomic scale. If you look where the lottery terminals are in the best-selling locations, it's not hard to figure this out. Secondly, it impacts the convenience stores. They're struggling too right now. And they've been the partner with the bars and restaurants for many, many decades. And any sale impact on them is going to be even more challenging today. And thirdly, that didn't come up before, but now is coming up, is the bars and restaurants. Keno represents 15% of all sales. Keno is a big part of the bar restaurant experience in Massachusetts. and to allow people, for example, to play on the cell phone online lottery while at a restaurant or a casino machine to put a casino on their phones is really disingenuous to the restaurant owner. And the proposal is like, you know, GPS tracking on your phone, which privacy issues we'll talk about later someday, to give a share of the wagers made on the online phone to the restaurant. And I'm kind of like, yeah, but you do know that your GPS on phone is only good within 20, 50 feet of you.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's not like pinpoint, you know, laser focus accuracy. It's not like we have a spy satellite looking at you through your phone to play online lottery. People have this division of that. It isn't. It's a triangulation. And depending on the strength of your signal and location of cell phone towers, the accuracy may be off by a little bit. So your phone maps, like Google Maps, have built-in capacity to try to calculate your current location with margins of error. So it tries to get you as accurate as possible.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard stories about driving on railroad tracks where the GPS was just slightly off on the map.
Yes.
It wasn't. They don't take a huge margin of error to make a wrong turn.
Yes, so, I think a truck drove onto the State House steps once, or nearby, I think, didn't it?
Yeah, people just follow the GPS and don't actually look in front of them. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, when we were driving down a JP, they eliminated the rotary to an intersection near that train station. So
yes.
Your maps that are on your cars are wrong. That is not a regular update.
Right.
So it's not infallible. That technology to me is untested. So I'm still not a fan of the lottery. I've stayed more than once in that, and those are basically the big three reasons.
Okay. Just this past week, Tacky, I'm sure you're aware, a federal court vacated the air quality permit for the Enbridge natural gas station in North Weymouth. What's your reaction to that?
Well, they still need to have a valid air permit.
Okay.
The air permit, I'm trying to remember the case. It's been a very, very busy week. So forgive me if I'm not exactly right on point on this one because it's just so much going on around me. If I remember correctly, I think the permit's incorrect. So they need to go through the permitting process again.
Okay.
If I'm trying to remember this, I think someone's going to let me know I'm wrong.
Okay.
I think that's what's going to happen now. But I think if I remember this correctly, because I'm kind of relying on the Patriot Ledger now, that I think it needs to be, a permit has to be done correctly. So there's a remedy.
Okay, we'll see and wait how that pans out. But we should talk about the census before we go, as we always do.
Sure. I want to remind everyone, 2020census.gov, please fill out your census forms. Right now, as of June 4th, the United States is a 60.6 response rate. Massachusetts is a 62.7 response rate, which is slightly higher. Quincy's below average for the state at 61.9, so we still have to do better, folks. 2020census.gov, please fill out your census form, because our neighbors in Braintree, it's a 73.7%, Weymouth's at 69.2%, and Milton's at 77.5%. Hmm. So our neighbors are doing a whole lot better than we are on this, so definitely please fill that out. I can't tell you by precinct or neighborhood because they use census tract on reporting. But, the best reporting areas is in West Quincy on the Adams Street section by the Brick and Bean, that area, mm-hmm. 81% reporting. The Squantum Marina Bay section is about 76%. And some of the more challenging areas of places like Penn's Hill, Quincy Center, like the census block cuts it up, so it's not exactly neighborhood lines or precinct lines. Places around Center Street, you're flowing at like 40.4% in the Brewer's Corner area, the Penn Street area. Quincy Center area is about 56%, and the Center Street area is about 51%. So, I mean, there are segments of the city neighborhoods that need to do more work on getting their census done. We've extended the reporting time to October. Well, not me, the federal government did. I continue to encourage people to fill out those forms. Do that, it'll make a big difference.
Absolutely. Yep. Again, 2020census.gov is the website to go to. Mm-hmm. Anything else, Jackie, we should own today?
Again, I remind everyone the state of emergency is still in effect. Yep. Please wear your mask in public. I know not everybody has gloves, but you can wear any glove. particularly ones that are washable. So I know everyone's running with plastic gloves. I do have plastic gloves, but people have like latex gloves and whatnot. But, you know, wear any kind of hand covering. If you don't have those, you know, bring a sanitizer with you when you're out to make sure that, you know, you keep yourself best possible clean. If you're not feeling well, stay home. You don't want to spread this disease. And there's been a bit of a conversation out there that if you're over 60, you die and, you know, everyone else should be just fine. Well, there's still 5% of the population under 60 that has a death rate. But, you know, doing some quick numbers from 2 days ago, your infection rate among people is highest among people under age 60. So 63% of your population in Massachusetts have tested positive is under age 60. So people like myself, people like yourself are the carriers. Even though we have a lower death rate and you still can die, you do not have to have pre-existing condition. People with non-pre-existing conditions have died. So don't let that myth think that you have vulnerability. But even though you may be, again, you're asymptomatic and you have some mild symptoms, you are a carrier. And given the fact that such a large portion of under age 60 are carriers, you know, you can particularly affect yourself and other people. And with these protests and people making statements in public in large gatherings, again, you got to be very mindful, bring a hand sanitizer. And, you know, people are getting hot. It's hot out there. People start taking their masks down because they have trouble breathing. Mm-hmm. You know, in open air is safer. There's air moving around you. The virus in your respiratory fluids dissipate faster. Right. It's not being enclosed with air conditioning where the air is blowing your germs next door to you and the person and vice versa. But at the same time, it's time. The longer you're with other people, the risk level goes up. So it's not just about being contagious, but it's also time with someone contagious. The odds rise up in terms of risk associated with contracting. So people have to be mindful of that. Time matters.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if there shouldn't be as much, if not more, emphasis on antibody testing as there is, you know, just viral testing.
The FDA has approved a antibody test. You can get an antibody test if you just Google it up. You're going to find several private urgent care centers doing antibody tests by schedule. But you're also going to find this disclaimer that just because of the antibody test done, it's not been FDA approved and does not meet any medical standards. So the FDA moving forward on a basically preliminary antibody test standard, and I'm hoping that the medical community is able to put together a standardized antibody test standard. The reality is all of us are going to have blood drawn at some point. And I know this sounds awful, again, no one wants government intrusion, big brother, but you might be finding yourself carrying some kind of certificate. So that you're going to go travel, indicating whether or not you're COVID-19 antibody positive.
Wow.
But that's not out of the question. You know, flights are starting to come back and forth a little bit internationally now. I know Greece has reopened very slowly and steadily right now to have tourists, even though, frankly, there's not a lot of people traveling. They are opening up their industry. And they shut down very early on. People overlook Greece. They shut down at like the very onset of the disease, which allowed them to try to manage it very quickly. And they went to full lockdown as well. I mean, they closed everything. Yep. Months to get to the stage where they're believed they're in a very low infection rate period. So, you know, people like what about herd immunity? There was a study in Sweden, again, a place we're looking at is trying herd immunity. Mm-hmm. They had a massive death count, 12% death rate among infected. Mm-hmm. Massive number. Put in perspective, Italy was about 11-12%. Wow. And yeah, they're like number four, I think, on the death list. And Brazil is rapidly going to overtake everybody on that list, as well as the UK is already number two. So it's very bad. But, I mean, they looked at the fact that not even 10% people have antibody positive, even though they're trying herd immunity. As a result, you want about 70% antibody positive for herd immunity. And it's not working as well in Sweden, in a small country, limited population areas, meaning it's not, you know, big population centers. Yeah, they're barely 10% body rate so far. So that means that if it's true that you have antibodies, it creates a degree of immunity or some level of resistance, if not immunity. They've not reached a point where people who are resistant to the virus prevent infection to other people. And that's how you protect non-infected people. So we'll talk about in the U.S., a smaller country, dense population centers also, not quite 10% on antibodies. And they've been going around with social distancing and all that stuff as recommendations. But their GDP is shrinking because of consumer confidence. With the death rate story going up to 11-12% of infected, people have generally thought, well, dying isn't good, so we're going to take our own precautions and try to reduce our spread and try to not die.
Right.
There's a lesson there for everybody who's listening. I mean, this is a personal responsibility again. And people who take very seriously the information provided should behave responsibly. And they can't make you do it. What we can do is try to get out of your way if you're not wearing a mask and you're not well. Believe me, I am going to get out of your way.
Yeah, I think until a vaccine is developed, that's really going to be the saving grace.
No, I agree. And like I said, I watch other countries. Korea has gone to contact tracing and businesses, so they have a QR code. Get this one. I mean, people are going to not like this idea here in the U.S. Before you walk into business, you scan into basically what a system the government gives you, a QR code identifying who you are. So you should get the disease. They can track you back to every location you've been to contact people who may be contracting the disease.
Yeah.
That everyone's identification going into a restaurant, they can reach out to everybody as well. So government intrusion for contact tracing. Again, this is a real going to be hard for people to accept. It really is going to be.
Well, I mean, I got my hair cut last week and I had to sign in with my name, address, and phone number.
Yeah, as you can tell, I'm still, if people can watch us a video, I'm still far from a haircut. but I mean, yeah, people are going to be very challenged to accept this idea.
Right.
I'm going to say right now, I know some people think, oh, this is common sense. Oh, who would object to this? Trust me. I've been doing this business long enough with the public, and I will tell you that this is going to be very challenging for a lot of folks to want to try to accept this concept. I mean, Korea's now gone into lockdown again, by the way.
Oh, have they?
Yeah, a part of a part lockdown, because they had an incident about a week ago. I think I talked about that one person.
Yes.
That was infected with three nightclubs, spread to 80 people, that became 100 people, that became 200 people. And
it was their Biogen, essentially.
Yep, one person. All it took was one. So the spread rate is that fast.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to tell people who don't believe that's true. I just don't know what to say.
Ways to reach out to you, Tacky?
Again, you can contact the office at 617-722-2014, 2014. I'm reaching that point like everyone else, 722-2014. Leave a message with any of the staff people. We do collect the voicemails regularly, and we'll get back to you as quickly as possible. You can email me at tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan at mahouse.gov. My email box is drowning on a lot of COVID updates, and the staff and I do sift through it. And again, it's my priority. I understand that people are very concerned about global warming. A lot of emails on that right now. Very important, I do understand. But we're still getting a lot of unemployment call issues. We're getting some more healthcare assistance issues as people's benefits are shifting. Unfortunately, as people are laid off now. We're getting a lot of calls about childcare issues, not just providers, but also people seeking that. So the services requests continue to go up as we slowly reopen publicly.
So, right. Yeah.
Again, I understand almost public policy is very important. I do read them. I do see them. I do read them. But again, kind of prioritizing based on immediate human need.
Very good. All right. We'll try and catch up with you again next week, if that's okay.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. What was it? See, we're old enough. Who's old enough to remember same bad time, same bad channel?
Pretty much, yeah.
That's like where we are.
Take care of yourself, Joe. All right. Thanks again. Be well. Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.